So,
and the next advertising man is that right?
There we go. Thanks, Jeff. Is this right? Sorry.
So
just to give a little bit of context for me, I worked in the advertising industry for nearly 10 years. And along the way, I've been on a kind of journey of asking sort of more and more questions about what the role of that industry is in society. So there's a couple of things that I've done along the way, but and sort of studied alongside that. So I've managed to gather, I think, 3 master's degrees now without ever actually quite going through to fulfil the full academic side of things. What I wanted to do with this time was just a couple of things, really. Firstly, I wouldn't call myself an expert on poverty. I wouldn't necessarily call myself an expert on food. What I am an expert in is marketing, and what I am an expert in, which I don't think many people are, is thinking quite hard about the ethical questions that marketing throws up for society. I think I'm conscious that I'm being quite broad brush about this, but I think there's a general thing where marketing is considered either trivial or bad. From the side of the people who might be analysing it hard, and so you, and from within the industry there's a sort of defensiveness. So the really knotty questions about what is a healthy role for marketing in our society very rarely get asked. What I want to try and do is sort of come at this from that perspective of going, right, okay. There are some really difficult things. I don't necessarily have all the answers to those, but I think they have a bearing, they have a very strong bearing on a lot of the big issues that we face as a society, one of which is food poverty. And I've tried to sort of draw out what I would consider to be kind of 4 questions that we should be thinking about in that context. Before I start on the first one, the other framing comment that I would make is, there's two sort of premises that I would establish. The first is that marketing does most of its work at an unconscious level, or at the level of sort of priming and the subconscious. And this is something that is among the sort of the more thoughtful in the industry is known and accepted and written about. So that there's it's easy to think that's a sort of evil thing. Set that aside for a minute. There's a guy called Robert Heath, who's a leading advertising academic. He's published under the auspices of ADMAP and the IPA and so on. He's written a book called Seducing the Subconscious recently. He's written a book called The Hidden Power of Advertising. These are sort of advertising industry endorsed and recognised things. And I think the other thing to say is just I mean, you guys both sort of referred to it, when the Nobel Prize for Economics has been awarded to a social psychologist. So we can't think about this stuff within a kind of rational agent theory model. There is stuff that is affecting how we are making our decisions and how we're thinking. The second premise that I would sort of put out as a framer is that the other sort of default model of thinking that I think we have to get rid of is the kind of Maslow hierarchy of needs way of thinking, where we kind of fulfil shelter and food and then we get to status and identity and so on. I think it's pretty well known within the sort of commercial psychologist world of advertising that isn't a way to think, that identity and values are as much something that you address first as coming to later. So, and I think if there's a contribution your group could make, it would be to point that out. And I think, I suppose the other thing I'd say is I think there's some really interesting framing comments in this report from the bishop saying sort of we need to address some of the deeper questions. And then I think that's what some of this taps into. So, without further ado, like I say, I could go into these questions, each one of these questions and any number of others in loads more depth, but I've just tried to sort of surface some of them. So if the first question I would ask is how much are we spending on marketing good and bad foods, and so bearing in mind that context of this stuff works primarily at an unconscious level, I just literally just pulling out a couple of stats to try and inform that conversation. You just go, right, without commenting on what Change for Life is and does and how it works, 2013-14 marketing budget of 10.9 million. One relatively minor brand has a budget of 8 million. I think there's some really useful comments in the working paper about sort of 50, the category level. What we're doing with this kind of influencing is that we can't sort of analyse Change for Life and then talk entirely separately about marketing of other products. So that's a relatively simple point. The second question: who are we targeting with bad food marketing and in what with so-called bad food marketing and in what media? I think that again, huge, massive conversation that would need to follow from that, just to illustrate why it's such an important conversation. I've picked on advertising to children, and particularly so the concept of advert games. Now, there are of course limits on television advertising to children of less healthy foods, but there are no limits. There is currently a legal loophole still, and there has been some noise about this. But just simply, if you put advert games into Google Images and see what you get Cheetos, Dr. Pepper, McDonald's, Doritos, Kool-Aid Man. This is a huge issue, and this is the key findings from a report put together at Bath University. I would sincerely recommend Agnes Nairn and her work to this group. But this is part of one thing that she was involved in. So advert games are widely used to market high salt, sugar and fat products, largely because those are banned in television advertising. Children as old as 15 do not recognise that advert games are adverts. And this idea of advert games persuade on a subconscious emotional level. And I think had more time to sort of put this, what I would say is that you've got to put that together with media consumption trends and understand that this is genuinely across society. So I know you might say this isn't relevant to those in food poverty. I believe it is. I mean, 70% of what are classed as DE households use the internet regularly at home. So this is this is just from Ofcom's sort of basic report on 2014 media consumption, and the average 16 to 24 year old plays online games for 8 hours a week. So I mean, we're talking quite a significant thing. Like I say, that's just one issue among many. The third question I would ask is about stepping sort of a layer closer to some of what you're talking about, Wendy, with the sort of the norms that surround people and are part of social groups. I think one of the ways that these norms are affected is through marketing, this is a point that I make again, like I say, in the spirit of raising a question that needs to be debated. I find it quite difficult to land on this one, but what we have to understand is that we have these brands associating themselves at an unconscious level with some really fundamental human needs and desires, and targeting the media that they buy in order to pursue that message at certain groups who are most likely to buy those. So you end up in something of a, potentially something of a vicious circle. So is it okay? I think that it's really difficult, this, because you can't just sort of say we can't let Coke talk about open happiness, because actually Coke is something that's consumed in sort of friendship. There might well be evidence that people feel a shot of pleasure from drink. So you can't kind of, I don't know what the answer to that is, but is it okay for Coke to be allowed to trademark the phrase open happiness? It's a really interesting question that as far as I'm aware, no one is really asking. Is it okay for Cadbury to say unwrap joy? Is it right? And to these things about what the family wants to do and be, when you know that a family wants to a lower income family has to think of food relatively functionally because of some of their structural context maybe, and then into that comes KFC saying it's better to share, endorse the right values in your children at an unconscious level, associating itself with sort of proper family values. Is that okay? Is a really interesting. And McDonald's arguably doing something great by sort of talking about the Ronald McDonald House charities, but associating themselves with the concept of kind of what matters and good family relationship and so on. These are quite deep and difficult questions, and I'm not saying that there's an easy answer where you just go, no, you can't do that. But we're not even talking about it at the moment. And I think into that, the last thing I would throw is this. So in this environment, we are effectively normalising and the idea that to consume these things is the kind of everyman thing to do. It's to be a proper Brit. You have to do this and these are seeding norms. These are establishing ideas in our society or validating them and reinforcing them. And I think we have to be aware of that. So I was just to finish that point off. I was very interested by the kind of some of the questioning around: is there a culture of poverty? Is there a sort of, is it structural issues, or is it mean that individuals don't have agency, or is it, on the other hand, social, which means that individuals have no agency? And I think that would be a really interesting discussion to get into. But to me, culture is a structural issue. Like it's not, and that doesn't mean that individuals have no agency, but it does mean that culture, the culture and the values and the norms that are created are part of that structural issue. So to create that binary is really, to me, quite unhelpful. And so to the fourth question I would ask, and Hannah sort of touched on this, and this actually is the question underlying, or one of the questions underlying what I do now, which I'm not here to talk about, but I can touch on. But the fourth question is, what effect does the sheer pervasiveness of marketing, food or otherwise, have on broader societal issues and on food poverty? And the question I ask is, what are we doing to ourselves when we tell ourselves we're consumers 3,000 odd times a day? So if the underlying construct in pretty much all marketing, but also in the fact that we measure consumer confidence as a key measure of success of our society and report it constantly, also in the fact that this is the language, I mean, even in your slides you slip into saying consumers, we do it, and it is the language that we use about people, and that is a deeply damaging thing. And I've just popped the reference for a fascinating set of studies that included a reaction study where the front screen of an association's sort of quiz, for half the sample was consumer reaction study and for half the sample was citizen reaction study, and that one word, priming impact, made people essentially more materialistic, less likely to care about one another or the planet in the questioning that followed. One word, and so there's really interesting stuff in the bigger issue of when you look at where we are and how we go from where we are, questions around food poverty and the coherence of society and so on. When we are telling ourselves that we are consumers constantly, what are we doing to that ability to respond to that? I think is a really important question. But also in the sort of genesis of these issues and problems. We did a bit of our own research that I'll share to sort of dig a bit deeper into this, because we wondered if the word is too kind of obvious a prompt. So what we did was we asked 3,000 people, to what extent do you think it's important to participate actively in society, and to what extent do you think it's important to be involved in your local community? And then for 1,000 people, we asked them, before they saw those two questions, we asked them, to what extent do you think it's important to find brands that fit your personality? For 1,000 people, they just saw those two questions. And for 1,000 people, they saw, I think the statement was, to what extent do you agree that everyone is born equal? And we called the brand statement the consumer prime, the no statement the control, and the equality statement the citizen prime. And that was literally, so this is regardless of how much people agreed with those statements. The people who saw the statement, it's important to find brands that fit your personality, were a third less likely to say it's important to be involved in my local community, just by seeing that normative statement. So I think this is a really important question. And then when we think about the context that we're going into with that question, what we are seeing, the world of marketing is moving in directions that are trying to find ways to talk to people more and more. And there's two boundaries that I think are being blurred. The first is the boundary between... So there's a now sort of, partly because of me, slightly infamous quote from a New York agency CEO who said that we don't know where the consumer is going to be anymore, so we have to be everywhere, which is quite powerful. And like I say, there's sort of two boundaries that are being eroded. The first is the boundary between content, i.e. editorial, and marketing. And I just pulled up the example. This popped up on my Twitter feed the other day. Share Through Europe is the biggest, is the first native advertising agency to start up in London. So native advertising is basically blending advertising into editorial content. That is the concept of native advertising. They've got a bit of a gender hit back on this, which is another interesting story. But anyway, and then the other one I wanted to call up is this: the National Schools Partnership. Now, so the second blurring line is: are there any spaces left in our lives where we are not framed as consumers? Now, I think the really interesting. I actually know these guys quite well, and I think a lot of the work they do is great, in a way. But there's a deeper question there about it. What they do essentially is create curricular products and materials on behalf of brands. Is that right? Is a really big question, and not an easy one, because where does the money come from if not? And da da da. And some of these things are doing really good stuff. So. But that framing thing of what we're doing to ourselves when we tell ourselves we're consumers 3,000 times a day, I think is really important. So that's me. I haven't gone quite so far as making kind of hard recommendations. I think to me that it's sort of, this is a big conversation that needs to be opened up. I would say that if I were to sort of be pushed to make recommendations, I think there is a need to think quite hard about whether there need to be some spaces in our lives where we are not spoken to as consumers, and what that would look like. And there's some really interesting stuff going on in Grenoble, for example. The mayor of Grenoble has just banned outdoor advertising and is planting trees in place of the signage boards. So the basis for outdoor advertising being targeted is, you say, well, I haven't entered any kind of social contract to be exposed to advertising just by walking out of my door. Maybe if I buy a magazine or I watch it. So there's some, that could be an interesting route. I think children is a very interesting area, he says, sounding intellectual about something that's far more emotive. So there's lots of aspects of this that I would call out, but I hope that's useful.